You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It gives me great pleasure to welcome back to our show an old friend, multiple James Beard Award winner, Ruth Reichel. She came here first when she was writing restaurant reviews for the New York Times, then to talk about her best-selling memoirs, Comfort Me with Apples, Tender at the Bone, Garlic and Sapphires, For You, Mom, Finally. And when she was editor-in-chief of Gourmet magazine, she was one of our regulars for many years for discussions of a wide range of food topics. Off the air, she told me more than once that she was dying to write a novel. And now she has. Her latest book is a novel called Delicious. It's published by Random House. I'm very pleased that it has brought Ruth Reichel back to our show as a novelist.
It is always great to be here, but I'm especially excited to be here as a novelist.
There's often a blurry line between memoir and fiction. Was the process of writing them all that different?
Well, you know, I feel like when I was wearing disguises at the New York Times that I wrote about in Garlic and Sapphires, it was a lot like writing fiction. I mean, I turned myself into these characters, and it made me understand what it was like to be someone else. And when I went to this book, when I really thought, okay, now I'm going to write a novel, I thought, I want to take someone who's absolutely not like me. I'm going to do what I did with those characters, and I'm going to choose a 21-year-old. I'm going to take a young person and feel what it's like to be that person.
Well, since many first novels are at least partly autobiographical, did writing memoirs free you from having to do that?
I think so. I mean, I felt like, you know, I've said all I need to say about myself, so it's really time for me to inhabit another body.
Although there are certain parallels between your life and this character's life, Billy's life.
Well, there are. I mean, I, of course, chose to set it, bring her to New York and have her go to work at a food magazine.
When you were at Gourmet, you even published some fiction, and there was a thing in the Sunday Times magazine, an interview with you, and you said that when you were given a chance to review a restaurant the first time, instead of writing a straight review, you wrote a short story that had a review running through it. So fiction has always been there as one of your goals?
You know, I grew up, my father was a book designer. I grew up in publishing. In our household, fiction was the highest calling. I mean, Dad would bring home, you know, he read everything that he designed. And he would bring home the books that he loved most. And so, you know, for me, it was always, you know, it's nice writing, but what you should really write is a novel.
Could you have done that kind of review when you were at the Times or the LA Times?
No, in fact, what happened was
that might have been fun. You would have broken the mold.
Well, I actually tried. I was so naive when I went to the LA Times. I had started at New West Magazine, and for 6 years I had been writing these fictional, very weird, the weirdest restaurant reviews ever written. I set stuff on Mars. I set it in the 17th century. I wrote love stories. And the first review I wrote at the LA Times, I wrote as if I had gone to this restaurant with Gloria Swanson. And my editor looked at me and he said, "Ruth, this is a newspaper." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "You can't make stuff up. Gloria Swanson is dead." And I thought, oh, I guess I have to think of another way to do this. But, you know, fiction was just sort of in my bones.
Your protagonist here is Billy Breslin, a young writer who travels from her California home to New York. Can you describe who she is when we meet her at the beginning of the novel?
Yeah, Billy is there. We don't know what the problem is, but she's clearly had a terrible loss of some kind. And she's very shy and she's phobic about, she has a perfect taste pitch. It's the thing that I have always wanted. She can taste anything and tell you what's in it.
Are there people who can? I know people who can kind of do that, but
I've exaggerated. This is a little bit of a. I mean, I have met one person in my life who I thought had Paula Wolfert pretty much has that ability. I don't think I've ever met anyone else.
Go to a restaurant and say, "There's just a little bit of saffron here."
Exactly, but it's very rare. And Billy is born that way, and for some reason now, she's very phobic about cooking.
Well, the novel starts with her experiencing a panic attack after being asked to cook.
Yes, and she ultimately pulls it together. But you know, what I wanted to do was take a character who was in jeopardy and put her in what I consider the most nurturing possible place. So I put her, one, in a food magazine, which I do think that food people have extraordinary generosity.
And so she winds up at this magazine called Delicious.
Yes.
A good name for a magazine. Maybe somebody will steal it. And it abruptly folds. It's folded by its publishing giant parent company. And as I was reading it, I thought, does that kind of thing happen in real life?
It does happen in real life. But what doesn't happen in real life is I have put this magazine where I wished Gourmet had been, in a fabulous old federal mansion. And so when Billy is left there, she's the only one who stays after they close this magazine. And she stays to sort of do all the cleanup. And she gets to wander around in this fabulous old mansion.
And she finds some old writing.
She goes into what I wish the Gourmet Library had been. I fantasized what would be the best library. And there's a hidden room, and she finds every letter that has ever been written. And among these letters are a whole cache of letters that were written by a little girl in Akron, Ohio, to James Beard during World War II.
In fact, this book allowed you to write a lot about history,
yes,
not just World War II, but you go all the way back to the Underground Railroad.
I love history. I love historical fiction. And it was really fun to research all of this. To research World War II it was an amazing time in America for food. It was the only time when all of us, because of food rationing, we all sat down at the same table. It didn't matter how rich you were. It didn't matter where you were. Because of rationing, because of Victory Gardens, because everybody was saving their fat to make ammunition, we all ate together. And I wanted to be in that time for a while.
And this also allows you to have a second voice, Lulu's voice, along with Billy's voice.
Part of what I wanted to do was I wanted to show that people can touch each other across space and time. I mean, there's a 70-year gap between these two people, and they ultimately save each other's lives.
My guest is Ruth Reichel, whose latest book is her first novel. It's called Delicious. And James Beard, of course, was important as a writer as well as somebody who gave us some great recipes. In fact, there is a long history of wonderful writing, MFK Fisher probably being the one that people most fondly remember, where food writing and food writing and food have been connected. It seems to me it's kind of hard to write about food because after you get past the obvious adjectives, you're kind of stuck.
Well, you know, the thing that gives me the most pleasure is when people say, boy, reading your book really made me hungry. Really, people keep saying to me, I had to get up in the middle and go get something to eat because it made me so hungry.
You are the editor of the Modern Library Food Series. Does that mean you've read an awful lot of the food books of the past? Especially those detective novels that involve food?
I haven't read a lot of detective novels, but I have read a lot. When you talk about MFK Fisher, then there's Liebling, who is fantastic, and Bemelmans, who shared, one of the other things, I in some ways I almost felt like I was channeling Bemelmans when I was writing this book, because he had this great love for New York. And New York almost becomes a character in the book. I mean, she wanders the streets and goes in and out of shops. And I grew up having my father read these great Bemelman stories about the Hotel Splendide and great New York characters. The old writers were fantastic.
You also give several accounts of the discrimination faced by Italian Americans during World War II. Did that come up when you were doing your research?
It did. That was such a shock to me. I had no idea that. I mean, we all know what happened to the Japanese and how shameful it is. But it is very little known that on the West Coast, there was a whole year where Italian Americans were classified as enemy aliens. They had a curfew. They were not allowed to go more than 10 miles from their homes. Joe DiMaggio's father, I mean, Joe DiMaggio was in the Army. He was a national hero. His father, who had been a fisherman all his life, was considered a security risk and was not allowed to fish. 10,000 Italians in San Francisco lost their homes.
Do you have any idea why something similar didn't happen to German Americans, despite the fact that there was a Bund here in New York City?
I really don't. But I suspect it's that they had maybe been here longer. I don't really know. But well, I was shocked about it. And one of the things that really made me proud is what stopped this discrimination was actually LaGuardia. LaGuardia went to Washington and said, you know, this has to stop. And after a year, the attorney general came to New York, came to Carnegie Hall, and apologized and said, you know, Italian Americans will no longer be classified as aliens.
Was there a singular inspiration for Fontanari's, the Italian food store where Billy also works?
Well, there are a couple. I was at DiPaolo's the other day, and
which is one a national treasure.
Which is a national treasure, and Lou DiPaolo's niece said to me, "I feel like you channeled my two uncles here. You combined them in one person." And and I also channeled a little bit. There's a fabulous guy in Sacramento named Daryl Cordy who knows, I think, more about food and wine than anybody else in America. So that store, and I mean, it's. I feel like those old New York stores are. We need to treasure them, admire them, patronize them.
There are a few others. Mario Batali's father had a store like that in Seattle.
Yes. But, you know, DiPaolo's has been there for more than 100 years. And, you know,
Russ
and
third Daughters. Generation.
Yeah.
And Russ and Daughters now is third generation as well. Or fourth generation.
Fourth generation, I think. And, you know, and that's one of the things that's so great about New York. And I wanted Billy to have the experience of working in this great shop.
You also wrote about the lavender scare. I'd never heard of that.
Well, that was a big part of the whole McCarthy thing. And everybody forgets that McCarthy did not just target communists. He also targeted gay men. And that was called the lavender scare. And there was a lot of really horrible things that happened. And so I get to write about all of these things as you're hearing from Lulu and from there's a historian that Billy meets.
You also reveal that everything old is new again. For example, one of the hottest trends these days is foraging. And Lulu learns about it in the 1940s.
To do this, I actually took foraging classes, which was fantastic. But I mean, one of the things I learned was, I mean, first of all, of course, if there's rationing, you're going to go out and forage. You're going to get anything you can to eat. But also during World War II, all of the kapok came from Japan, and they needed kapok to make life vests for the sailors. And they found out that milkweed floss worked the same way as kapok. So school children all over America went out to gather kapok to gather milkweed floss to use for life vests every fall. And Lulu goes out with her class and then discovers you can also eat it and that it's delicious.
And now, because of a loss of milkweed, the butterflies are suffering.
Exactly. Although I discovered that I have on my driveway upstate, I didn't know what those weird pods were, and now I know that I have to go out and eat them.
Just one more thing before you go. New York culinary scene has changed quite a bit since you stopped reviewing for the New York Times.
Yes, it has.
Did you come to Brooklyn much in the old days?
I did not come to Brooklyn much in the old days, and if I were reviewing now, I would be living in Brooklyn.
Ruth Reichel's novel is called Delicious. Is there a second one in the works?
There is. I am working on it now.
This one is published by Random House, and I'm sure it's going to be a bestseller just as all the memoirs were. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. This was really fun.